Okay, good Ner Shabbos, everybody. This week is Parshas Mikates, and the title for the Isir is It's Never Enough and It's Never Satisfying. So, that's a title many of us can relate to, because the nature of what we want in life is oftentimes never enough and never satisfying. On top of that, persons who have difficulty with addiction and compulsive behavior certainly find themselves in a struggle and in a cycle where it is never enough and it's never satisfying in the end, despite all the efforts and all the time and the money and the destruction that goes into the behavior. The end is that it doesn't do enough for you. So let's take a look at what that has to do with this week's parsha. So in Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Beis, we encounter the cows of Paro's dream. And it says, Hine min ha'yor olo shem paros yifos mareh u'riyos v'osor parte ene ba'ochu. These seven cows that were healthy and beautiful looking, they were grazing by the reeds, by the swamp area. Hine sheva paros achiros olos achrihen, and then seven other cows come out from the Nile. Mineor Raos Mareh Vadakos Bosar Vata Amodna Eitzel Paros Alsvas Eor. And so those cows, the seven skinny cows, stand next to the seven fat cows by the Nile. Vatochal Mareh Paros Haraos Hamareh Vadakos Bosar Esheva Haparos Yifos Hamareh Vabrios Vayikatz Paro. And then the fat cows, and then the skinny cows eat up the fat cows, and Paro wakes up. So, our understanding of the dream is that the fat cows, the skinny cows, remained unaffected by the fat cows, and also later on the stalks of wheat remained unaffected, as the narrow and beaten stalks of wheat remained unaffected, even though they swallowed the plump and healthy and juicy stalks of wheat. So, no matter how much you get, the Parsha tells us, sometimes you can't really be satisfied, right? The skinny cows couldn't really be satisfied, and the stalks of wheat couldn't really be satisfied. So in this week's Parsha, we're going to find a metaphor for addiction, as you can see, but also some antidotes. Now, one of the features and signs of addiction is important to understand from a mental health point of view is tolerance. The concept of tolerance is that the addict requires stronger and stronger dosages to maintain the same level of stimulation and relief. So it doesn't matter if you're dealing with alcohol or you're dealing with heroin or it's a process addiction like porn or some kind of sex addiction. The condition is the same, that you're going to need more and more to get the same results over time. And that's the principle of tolerance, because the body gets used to, or the mind gets used to a certain level of stimulation, and then it becomes to have less of an effect. But the person craves and needs the higher effect, and so they have to increase their activity, increase their joy, their dose, increase the novelty. Now, tolerance is also one of the factors that makes addiction very dangerous, because oftentimes it'll push the person to greater length and riskier behavior, because in order to get their fix, they need to increase their doses. So when it comes to drugs, a person could increase the dosage beyond what the body could actually tolerate. When it comes to other processes, the risk of self-harm and the exposure rises and rises as the person is looking to achieve some level of stimulation that approximated the original jolt. I never smoked, but I understand the first smoke after Shabbos is extremely tasty, because after a whole 25 hours of abstinence from nicotine, and then to have that smoke, you feel again the freshness and the power of the nicotine. Because again, nicotine is a highly addictive substance, and as tolerance builds, you need more to get that same feeling. If you take a vacation from the nicotine for a Shabbos, and then you come back to it, then that first smoke feels really good. Okay, so the problem is, when it comes to porn and other sexual behavior, is that the desire for more and more and the need for more and more to achieve that stimulation oftentimes can take the form of cruising, which means the search. Actually, the search is more stimulating to the addict than the actual act. The search itself is highly stimulating, and really it's reflected in the Chazal, Hirhuri Avera, Kushan Me'Avera, the thoughts of the sin are even more damaging spiritually than the sin. But in any case, the cruising behavior can be very dangerous, and the person is pushing for more and more things. And this is where sometimes porn addicts cross a line and they begin to look at intense images such as rape or even homosexual behavior for a person who really is heterosexual, or some kind of live video in-person interaction. And eventually, they also can get sucked into child porn. And here's the interesting thing. When I refer to child porn, I'm not talking about pedophiles. People that have pedophilia have a particular sexual developmental condition that leads them to be significantly and possibly exclusively aroused by sexual images and acts of children. That's not the case with many porn addicts who are in their quest for more novelty and stimulation. They just end up downloading images that are of minors, or perhaps they're having a webcam session with somebody who they don't realize is a minor, or they would rather not know is a minor and is doing this to make money for their own reasons. The problem is, folks, the law doesn't care, and it's a federal offense to possess sexual images of a minor, and people can do serious jail time for this. There are even cases of minors sexting pictures of their girlfriends and such, and since the fact is it's an underage picture, that itself is a federal crime. By the way, interesting fact, do you know what the number one most searched term on the internet? So the number one word in the entire world of internet travel, what is the number one word in a search? The word is, drum roll please, teen. That's right. The word teen is the number one word that is searched on the internet. That says a lot about our culture. Okay, so that's the sugya of tolerance. Very important to understand the dangers of tolerance and the problems of tolerance. And to some degree, Pharaoh's dream was a metaphor of explaining tolerance, that you could be so hungry that anything you eat will be ineffective for certain things. Now, aside from warning Yosef's Pharaoh about the impending famine, it was also a message about, it was actually several messages about human behavior and constructive ways to deal with desire. So, if you take a look in the Gemara Sanhedrin on Kod Zayin Amar Aleph, the Gemara quotes the story of Bathsheba and David. And on Rabbi Yehuda says, Shehafach mishkavo shal laila shal yom. David HaMelech wanted to manage his desire. And so his idea of how to manage his desire was that he would have, frankly, a lot of sex. And he turned his night into day, which Rashi explains over there, that basically he had sex at all times in order that he would not be thinking about another woman. And the Gemara Sanhedrin says that was a defective strategy. But it's Alma Minu Halacha. David HaMelech forgot a tradition, which is Eivar Katan Yesh Ba'odam Nazbio Ro'ev Mar Evil Saveya, that there's a small organ in the body of a man, and that if one starves that organ, then he's satisfied. If one satisfies that organ, then he is starved. And then it goes on to say that he is some kind of noise attracted him to the roof, and once he saw Bathsheba, the Gemara compares it to shooting an arrow into a beehive, that his desire was so aroused, he was not able to control himself. Now, it's important to understand that actually that Gemara, like many Gemaras, taken at face value without any context and overall discussion, is misleading. Because one would understand from that Gemara that the idea of having a regular, healthy sexual outlet is an ineffective strategy in dealing with sexual desire. And that is not true. That is absolutely not true. It's absolutely a desire, an effective strategy. In fact, it's one of the reasons why it's important for a person to always be married, even if they've already had children. And in point of fact, one of the greatest examples is of Abba Chilkiah. Now, Abba Chilkiah was a saintly person. Abba Chilkiah was a grandson of Choni Ma'agel, and Abba Chilkiah himself was able to work wonders and miracles when it came to rain. He was a ultra tzaddik. So you would think Abba Chilkiah would be the least candidate for anybody to be worried about his Shmiras Einayim. Sounds like a fair point, right? I wouldn't be worried about the tzaddik of the door, that he would have a problem, that we should be concerned in some way about a Shmiras Einayim. But his wife didn't think so. Gemara in Tainus on Chaf Gimel of the days, and he endorses this because he's explaining to his student why he does this. My time to Kimot Amaralamosa. Why, when you come to the city, Nafka the Bisu Demar, your wife comes out Kimikashta, all adorned, which could mean makeup also. Amalahu, so he said to his students, Kedei Shelo Etan Einai Beisha Acheres, so my eyes will not wander to another woman. So you see from here very clearly that normal and appropriate sexual outlets is a very important tool in the arsenal of Shneiras Einayim, and really of managing all sexual impulses. The point of the Gemara in Sanhedrin is that the addict is different, because the addict will go to extremes to try to satisfy his desire instead of also working on curbing them. The Gemara is criticizing David HaMelech and his behavior because he deviated from the norm. He was having excessive amounts of sex, even during the day, which was considered for him not appropriate. And because he was doing that to excessive amounts at unusual times, in order to control his desire, what it was is it was almost an exclusive strategy. And as an exclusive strategy to manage desire, that's problematic, as an exclusive strategy. And that's where the Gemara kicks in and says that sometimes one must starve something in order to satisfy it instead of indulging it. Of course, also, it's a defective strategy when you're dealing with an addict, because an addict doesn't own the problem. So a normal, so to speak, normal person with a normal relationship with sexuality, even people who are not addicts have plenty of difficulty with Shmiras Einayim and have plenty of sexual desire. Thank God for that. That's what we're supposed to have. We're supposed to have sexual desire. It's a good thing. So they need normal outlets to satisfy that desire. That's not what we're talking about over here. When a person puts all the blame on the environment and says, I need, I need, I need, it's not fair that I'm not getting, or I have to get, without exercising any sense of responsibility, that's what the Gemara is talking about. Now, the symbol of the dream was also a warning to Paro about the illusion of control, which is another difficulty that addicts have, because you can try all you want, but in the end, if Hashem doesn't want it, it's a zero-sum game. So, you can hoard as much food as you want, and you can eat as much as you want, but if you're not supposed to be full, you won't be full. And the only way that Paro was able to succeed was getting guidance from Yosef. This is also representative in the future Paro, who saw the Jews were multiplying and was distressed. He tried to overwork them and torture them so that they should not have children. But what does the pasuk say? Kasher yanu kein yifras. Right? As much as they afflicted the Jews, so too the Jews continued to spread. Right? So you can't fight Hashem's will. You can't control Hashem's will. And Paro had to learn that. And it, within this dream was a harbinger, a warning to his future self or to the future pharaohs. The brothers, too, thought that they can control things. The brothers said, we'll see what happens to his dreams. We'll throw him into the pit. We'll sell him to the Ishmaelim, to the Midianim, to the Mitzrayim, whatever we'll do. We'll get rid of him. We'll see. The answer is, everything that the brothers did, in the end, led to Yosef having more instead of less. Right? And also, the Mitzrayim, they lost their wealth in the end. The wealth that they tried to protect from the Jews, in the end, right, they not lost their triumph. And Shmuel's Perek Yavei is Pasuk Lama Tov. Now, so the aspect of control is really being addressed in these dreams too, which is that you can't really control something that's not God's will, and that there has to be a degree of acceptance, and one has to take guidance. In this case, Paro took guidance from Yosef wisely. There's one last aspect of addiction that's addressed in these stories, which is the notion of delay of gratification and planning ahead. Every addict comes to understand, as they maintain their sobriety, all the tremendous rewards of sobriety. But at first, that's very difficult because they have to push off immediate pleasures for the sake of their long-term goals and the long-term sense of deep satisfaction and meaning, which leads to a happiness that's beyond the immediate fix. But that takes delay of gratification. Yosef was a young man who was impulsive originally and somewhat youthful, right? The Pasuk Perek Lehem Zayin Pasuk Bey says, Hu Nar. He was a Nar. Rashi says, Shai Osamai Sanarus. He behaved as a youth. Masakin Besaro, Mamashvash Beinov. He would fix his hair. He would somehow or another adorn his eyes. Perhaps young men in those days wore some kind of mascara. See how that would go over today. Anyway, today she and Nira Yafa, in order to appear handsome. So Yosef was, in this sense, Chazal describing him as a typical teenager, a little too vain, a little too narcissistic, invested in his looks. And he graduates slowly to that of a mature leader who can delay gratification, who can think wisely and plan ahead. He redirects his desire when he's in the throes of it by seeing an image of his future and understanding that if he would have indulged with Ashen Potiphar, he would have destroyed his future. So he was able to keep in mind a distant future, which is the ultimate delay of gratification. The Gemara Soto, Mamad Bavim Ubeis, explains, It was on that day he came to the house to do his work. There was that day. It was a special Yom Tov for the Mitzvim. They were doing some special Avodah Zarah. Everybody was out at their temples. And not Osnas, we'll get to her later. Ashes Potiphar, she decided to pretend that she was sick. And she knew Yosef was going to be home also, because Yosef was not an over the Avodah Zarah. So Rav Yochanan, Malamish, Yishmein, Levar, Everness, Gavnu. They actually both planned the trip. They planned to meet up. And then later on it says, Ain ish me anshi abayis. The pasuk says, there was no man from the people of the house. So the place was abandoned. But there was a man in the house. There was one man in the house. The man was the image that Yosef saw of his father. The Gemara says, Ba'ot kashor, ba'ot sodiuk mishal ovis. The image of his father came to him. When Nirzalo b'chalon, and he saw him in a window, Omelo Yosef, he said to Yosef, Asidin achecha shiyichtev lo avne ephod. Your brothers are going to be written on the stones of the ephod. Va'ato b'neihem, and you would be amongst them. V'zoncho shiyimcha shmecho mi'b'neihem. Is it your wish that your name would be erased from there? The tikka roa zonos, and you would be called someone who cavorts with women of ill repute, a woman who commits adultery. So Yosef looks out the window, perhaps in the direction of Canaan, and he has this image of his father that comes to him, and he understands how he would disappoint his father greatly with this behavior, and how he would destroy his own future. So that aspect of seeing the future and delaying gratification, that is a very important part. This was a message to the people of Mitzrayim. They were the pinnacle of civilization of that time. Now, the Shvatim were impressive, but the Shvatim were 12 tribes. They were a clan. Mitzrayim was a metropolis. But if you're careful, and you delay gratification, and you store your food during the years of plenty, you will succeed. And of course, Mitzrayim succeeded tremendously, taking away the wealth from all the surrounding areas as they sold their grain that they stored. There's the famous Stanford marshmallow experiment, which I've spoken about in another shiurim, which is absolutely fascinating, where they took preschool kids and they put in front of them a chocolate-covered marshmallow, and they told them that if you don't eat this marshmallow, when we come back, you can have two. And so on hidden camera, they'd observe the kids. Some kids would eat it, some would touch it, some would eat it and lie about it and say, a bird took it away. Anyway, the kids that had the self-control and were able to delay gratification, those children who waited and got the two marshmallows, those children, 15, 16 years later, when they were restudied, displayed all the qualities of success in life. They were high scorers on tests, they were college graduates, they had white collar jobs, they had less illness, they had less alcoholism. So the whole personality, incredibly, the whole personality and the whole key for success was already encoded in these young children, and the young children who displayed the ability to delay gratification at that early age were incredibly successful later on in life. Yosef himself is actually personification of delayed gratification. He was his father's ben zekunim from Rachel. Yaakov worked not 7 years, but 14 years for Rachel, although technically he married her after 7 years and then Sheva Brachos with Leah, but he had to work 14 years for her. Not only that, we know that before Yaakov was married, he never was Roah Keri. Rashi, Perek Memtes Pasuk Gimel, Rashi's Oni, by Reuben. Reuben is described as his first strength. Yitit Rishon Shalom, Shalom Roah Keri Miyamav. He did not see Keri Miyamav. By the way, just an important aside, but still valid. Every now and then you see a chazal that speaks somewhat incredulously and admiringly about people who are not Ruach Harry. Pasuk about, I forgot whether it's Elio or Elisha, but the woman says, I know you're a Kadosh, because she saw the sheets weren't stained. Even the Kohen Gadol, they kept him up all night because they were afraid that he was Ruach Harry. Although those missions in Yuma, first mission in Yuma, second mission in Yuma, they're talking about the Baisheni, the Kohen and Gadol were not actually of such high stature. But in any case, the point is, despite all the spiritual, catastrophic, and cataclysmic effects of wasted Zerah, Carrie itself, an eternal emission that happens without any hearer, you know, one sees is not that unusual. You know, the person has to do whatever they can to avoid it, but you see from Chazal, if they're admiring Yaakov for not being Ruach Harry B'Yamav and others as well, you see it's not actually as problematic. But in any case, something makes me think that the people listening to this shiur are not really concerned about inadvertent Chosas Zera, but much more serious problems, and for sure, that is the focus here. Now Yosef also got a prize at the end. Right? He got the promises that come to people that abstain. He was very successful, ultimately, and he married Asenath. Now, Asenath was Potiphar's daughter, it was seen from the Pesukim. Now, of course, there's Midrashim about she was Dina's daughter, but leaving all that alone, she was Potiphar's daughter. So imagine that the daughter of the object of his desire, he ends up marrying probably a younger and prettier version of the object of his desire. Now, there's a Midrash in Koheles Rabbah on Perichas Pasuk Yud. I'm not quite sure what it means, but I think I know what it means. So I'll say it over. You can look it up to judge for yourself. But Rebbe Bon Omar, Tzadikim Holchu Lasham Vayavo. Tzadikim go to where they want to go, and they come back successfully. Kagon Yosef L'Ozenas, Yehoshua L'Rachov, Boaz L'Rus, Moshe L'Chovav. I think what they're saying is they're talking about unlikely pairs. They're talking about Yosef ended up marrying Asenath. Yehoshua married Rachav. Rachav was the prostitute who lived in the walls of Jericho. The Gemara talks about how beautiful and how skillful she was, that people would just mention her name and they would already go into incredible heights of sexual arousal. Yehoshua married her, but legitimately didn't engage illegitimately with her. Boaz married Ruth. Again, it's right in the Megillah. Then Ruth comes to him at night, and he resists and marries her legitimately. And Moshe Tachovav, I'm not sure why they say Moshe Tachovav. They really mean Moshe to Tzipora. I'm not really sure about that or why, but it would seem to be saying from this Medrash that the rewards for those people that waited was they ended up getting their object of desire. So what's the upshot? The upshot is that there is a promise of delayed gratification. Good things really do come, and it really does get better. Relationships get repaired, or for those looking for new ones, they can find that too. Sexual satisfaction and intimacy can be achieved through the bond of normal marriage and devotion. And this happens. It starts with abstinence. It doesn't end with abstinence because there's a lot more that has to be done. But it's the klimaxic bracha. It's the foundation of a beginning of a process and a journey that can lead a person to a much better place. Okay, I'm going to shut off the recording. Hold on.